Welcome back to Through the Word. Melanie Hurlbut here with Habakkuk chapter 1, verse 1. This is the prophecy that Habakkuk the prophet received. Now listen as Habakkuk jumps right in with his shocking complaint to the Lord in verse 2. How long, Lord, must I call for help, but you do not listen, or cry out to you violence, but you do not save? Wow, Habakkuk's bold, and he's distraught. But why isn't God responding to his prayers? It's sometime after 622 BC, since Josiah started his reforms. But why aren't Josiah's reforms enough? Listen to the intensity of his protest escalate in verse 3 and 4. Why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrongdoing? Destruction and violence are before me. The strife and conflict abounds. Let that sink in for a moment. What is happening? Individuals have returned to the Lord in Judah, but its society as a whole is still dominated by destruction and violence, strife and conflict. Justice is perverted, and the righteous don't stand a chance. I feel Habakkuk here. Really, God? We're doing all we can, and it isn't enough. You've got to show up and do something. Look at verse 4. Therefore, the law is paralyzed, and justice never prevails. The wicked hem in the righteous, so that justice is perverted. I love this about Habakkuk. He knows following God isn't just a private thing. He knows God cares about justice. And he knows that without God's help, violence and injustice is more contagious and destructive than righteousness. And notice this. Habakkuk says, the law is paralyzed. Sin is so infectious that the law is no longer working as it should. Josiah's revival led with a rediscovery of God's law. But Habakkuk is watching as the regulations of the law are overtaken by injustice and crippled by the strength of a rebellious people. The law isn't working, and God needs to step in and do something. Now, speaking of the law, there's a strange misconception in the church that says that in the Old Testament, people were saved by following the law, but that in the New Testament, God's people are saved by grace. Habakkuk will have none of that. He knows that God's law, as necessary and good as it is powerless to save his people. He's watching as the law is paralyzed in its effectiveness. God's law just isn't getting through to his people. God needs to step in and cut more deeply to the heart of the problem. But to Habakkuk's startled surprise, the sharpness of God's answer is incredibly disturbing. Listen to the Lord's response in verse 5. Look at the nations and watch, and be utterly amazed. For I'm going to do something in your days that you would not believe, even if you were told. I'm raising up the Babylonians, that ruthless and impetuous people who sweep across the whole earth to seize dwellings not their own. They are a feared and dreaded people. They are a law to themselves and promote their own honor. God commands Habakkuk to lift up his eyes and look. Look at the nations. Babylon is coming. A divine instrument of judgment on wicked Judah. That is the answer to Habakkuk's complaint. God is doing something, yet this is a radical intervention. If God were giving Judah's sin a cancer diagnosis, it would be at a stage 4. What God has done in the past for his people is insufficient in Habakkuk's day to deal with such a widespread epidemic of injustice. So the Lord has another plan. Josiah's revival offered Judah forgiveness of their wickedness, but the nation as a whole has refused God's healing ways. The sin infection has become systemic. So now, God is going to fight fire with fire. When I was a toddler, I was a biter. My mom tried many ways to teach me that biting was wrong, tapping my lips, timeouts, speaking sternly to me. But when I stubbornly clung to my wicked ways, a stronger strategy was in order. To my shock, my mom bit me back. The Lord's response to Habakkuk in verse 6 is just as shocking. God will use a ruthless and impetuous people. Babylon. Listen as the Lord describes Babylon's coming swift and astounding rise to world power in verse 8. Swifter than leopards, fiercer than wolves, and swooping like eagles. God shows Habakkuk a future he doesn't want to see. Habakkuk is watching as Babylon makes a stunning grab at global power. In 612 BC, Babylon will conquer Nineveh, Assyria's capital. By 609 BC, King Josiah will be killed in the crossfire by Pharaoh Necho, who will travel through Judah to support Assyria. By 605 BC, Babylon will have replaced Assyria as global powerhouse and will have Judah's temple treasures firmly in possession, along with the prophet Daniel and others taken as tribute. Within 20 more years, both Jerusalem and the temple will be destroyed. This is not the miraculous deliverance that Habakkuk is looking for. It's judgment. It's severe. And it's coming soon. Judah doesn't get a pass on sin for being God's people. Habakkuk learns that God will judge sin wherever he finds it. And, like the foolish ape who didn't believe in Tash in C.S. Lewis's The Last Battle, Judah is going to get more than they bargained for. And notice the cause and effect. In verse 4, Judah rejects God's law. In verse 7, the Babylonians are a law unto themselves. Judah has called upon lawlessness, and lawlessness will come swiftly through the destructive power of the Babylonians. And this is where Habakkuk's understanding of God really gets tested. Listen in verse 12, as his confidence in the Lord begins to shake. Lord, are you not from everlasting? My God, my Holy One, you will never die. You, Lord, have appointed them to execute judgment. You, my rock, have ordained them to punish. In other words, how on earth can you, God, use them, Babylon? Your good, their evil. Habakkuk is shocked, and he's grappling to align God's actions with God's nature as he knows it. Verse 13, your eyes are too pure to look on evil. You cannot tolerate wrongdoing. Why then do you tolerate the treacherous? Why are you silent while the wicked swallow up those more righteous than themselves? Habakkuk knows that only God will outlast people. He knows that the Lord is both creator and holy judge. He knows God wants justice, not just in Israel, but throughout the world. He knows this because the Lord took Israel as a nation to himself and became their rock on which they stand, even if they haven't been standing very well. And yet, here is the Lord saying he will use godless Babylon to punish Judah. How can this be a legitimate solution to Judah's sin problem? How will letting Babylon swallow up Judah from among the nations promote justice throughout the earth? Sometimes the disease is so bad, the cure is worse than you ever imagined. In horror, Habakkuk watches as wickedness overwhelms his last flickers of hope for Judah's salvation. Look at verse 14. You have made people like the fish in the sea. God's people are being compared to fish to be caught and devoured. And in verse 15, the wicked gathers them up in his dragnet. This paints a graphic picture. Babylon effortlessly catching Judah and the nations in the net of their military might. And verse 16, he burns incense to his dragnet. Babylon worships its power as it gets rich from this destruction. And in verse 17, a flabbergasted Habakkuk asks, is he to keep on emptying his net, destroying nations without mercy? If God allows Babylon to behave like this, how will the nations ever know the Lord? Habakkuk must have an answer. His faith, the faith that he staked his very life upon, depends upon it. And so, with emotions raw, Habakkuk comes before the Lord and takes his stand. Chapter 2 opens with his fierce declaration. I will stand at my watch and station myself on the ramparts. I will look to see what he will say to me and what answer I'm to give to this complaint. This is not showing up to church every Sunday saying everything is fine. Confused and frustrated, Habakkuk takes his protest to the Lord, determined to watch and wait upon his answer. So what about us? There's lots of talk today of Christians deconstructing their faith, and I think we can all relate. Injustice in our world, injustice in the church, assaults our eyes and insults our faith over and over again. How long, Lord? But Habakkuk models for us a choice. Will we attribute evil to God? Or worse yet, mock God? Woody Allen quipped that if God does exist, he must be an underachiever. But Habakkuk shows us another way, the way of lament. Read Habakkuk chapter 1. Let's join Habakkuk in our shared pain. Let's come unashamed into the presence of God, and let's wait for him to speak into that paradox of our knowledge of God that doesn't always seem to fit with our experience in this world. Will God show up? And will he answer Habakkuk's complaint? Join me tomorrow to find out in Habakkuk chapter 2 on Through the Word.
Join us next time as we continue the journey one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.